Good afternoon, everybody. It's my pleasure to comment on Starbucks' 2015 full year's figures. I would like to start with chart number three of the presentation, which should be in front of you. This is a review of the targets we had set for the fiscal year of 2015. This review shows that our strategy of diversification continued to prove its worth also in this year and provided, again, positive results. Our output volume grew by 5% and amounted to 14.3 billion euros. The earnings before interest and taxes, EBIT, even increased by 21%, amounting to 341 million euros, which corresponds to an EBIT margin of 2.6% on sales, and so is fully in line with our forecast. The trend in the last couple of years shows that we are on a steady path towards achieving our goal of 3% EBIT margin on the revenue from 2016 onwards. Higher earnings naturally mean that our shareholders might expect a higher dividend, too. The management board will therefore propose to the annual general meeting on 10th of June a dividend of 0.65 per share after 0.50 in the year before. The dividend payout ratio of 43%, however, remains fully within the range of 30%-50% of the net income of the minorities, as defined by our dividend policy since the IPO in 2007. Let's now change to chart number four. We generated an output volume of 14.3 billion in the 2015 financial year, a plus of 5%, as I mentioned before. This was thanks to several large projects, especially in Slovakia, where the country stood out with especially high gains, although market conditions in the Czech Republic, Poland, or Hungary also made for very positive growth in those countries. In Germany, the high output volume was largely a result of the acquisition of the facility management, DIW Group, in late 2014. We have not yet seen major effects of the expected refurbishment activities in the West German infrastructure figure in those numbers. Let's come to the order backlog on page number five. This is the only figure which fell back in 2015, a development and a reflex, of course, on the strong output of the year. This had already become apparent over the course of the year. The figure finally settled at 13.1 billion on the 31st of December 2015, which means a 9% reduction over the year before. This development can be traced back to the completion of the already mentioned large projects in Slovakia, Hungary, also in Italy, as well as on the adverse economic environment in Russia. On top of that comes our motto, "Put profitability first," an approach which implies a strict project selection policy. On page number six, we give the comparison with the EBITDA and EBIT figures of the year before. In total, there was a 13% increase of the EBITDA, which amounted to 816 million euros, while the EBITDA margin grew from 5.8% in 2014 to 6.2% in the year 2015. Compared to the previous year, this figure improved in Poland, Czech Republic, and Slovakia, amongst others. A tunneling project, on the other hand, in Chile, represented a significant burden on the result of the year. The depreciation and amortization stood at 475 million euros, which corresponds to a plus of 8% over the previous year. The goodwill impairment in the amount of 25 million euros represents a slight decline versus the previous year's level of almost 29 million. The figure also contains a special depreciation allowance related to the sale of the hydraulic engineering equipment in the amount of almost 22 million euros, as well as higher depreciation on rail construction equipment. The EBIT figure increased significantly by 21% to 341 million, which corresponds to an EBIT margin of 2.6% after 2.3% in the year before. Let's now come to page number seven, the earnings per share and the net income after minorities. The net income came to rest at about the same level of the previous. The net interest came to rest at about the same level of the previous year, 25 million versus 26 million minus. The positive foreign currency effects increased slightly from 5 million in 2014 to 8.5 million in 2015. In the end, the earnings before taxes, EBT, showed a plus of 24%. The income tax rate, in the absence of tax relief for the losses in Chile, goodwill impairments, and in response to back taxes due to the company audit in Germany, was again unusually high, with 42.4% on the average after 42.3% on the average in 2014. The net income settled at 182.5 million euros in 2015 after 147 million in 2014. This corresponds to an increase of 24%, as already mentioned before. Earnings owed to minority shareholders amounted to 26 million euros compared to almost 20 million the year before. This can be explained by the higher earnings for Strabag AG in Cologne, Germany. The figure will drop substantially as a consequence of the full acquisition of Züblin in April 2016. The net income after minorities, 156 million for 2015, showed already a plus of 22% versus the previous year, and will increase even more in the future due to this acquisition. The earnings per share also increased by 22% and amounted to €1.52 by the end of 2015. A word about our dividend shown on page number 8. We place always great value on a constant dividend policy, and we have done so since the IPO in 2007. My management board colleagues and I are keeping to our goal of paying out 30 to 50% of net income of the minorities to the shareholders in the form of a dividend once a year. Higher earnings hence naturally means that our shareholders might expect a higher dividend too. The management board will therefore propose to the annual general meeting a dividend, as I said before, of 65 eurocent per share. This is the highest dividend since our IPO. The dividend hence stands at 2.8% in relation to the share price at the 31st of December 2015. Let's come to page number 9 and the net cash situation. It is our strategic priority to maintain financial strength. In 2015, we succeeded in doing so. The equity ratio is stable at 35%. We increased our net cash position again from 249 million to 1,094 million in 2015, the highest value since the IPO. Positive factors also for the ratings agency Standard & Poor's. In June 2015, S&P raised the investment grade rating for Strabag by one level from BBB- to BBB. The outlook was left stable. S&P sees Strabag's strengths above all in the stable margins in an otherwise quite cyclical market environment, in the effective risk management, and in the strong market positions in our various markets. Our financial strength and the S&P investment grade rating allows us to ensure the long-term existence of the group and to finance at favorable conditions. At the beginning of 2015, for example, we were able to issue a 7-year 200 million euro bond with a coupon of only 1.625%. On page number 10, we give the net cash position, which grew as a result of the unusually high level of cash and cash equivalents. This leads us to the details of the cash development shown on that page. With a 6% higher cash flow from earnings of 658 million euros, the cash flow from operating activities grew by a considerable 54% to 1,240 million euros. The working capital improvement, on the other hand, was influenced by the uncharacteristically high project-related advance payments. As no larger acquisitions were made in the 2015 financial year, the cash flow from investing activities, despite high investments in property, plant and equipment, stood at minus 320 million, significantly below the previous year's value of 435 million, where we had seen the acquisition of the DIW FM activities. The cash flow from financing activities amounted to minus 118 million after minus 142 million the previous year. The positive effects from the bond issues and repayments were countered by cash outflows from returns of financing liabilities and dividends. On page number 11, we show that as a result of the high cash flow generation, we could post again a positive free cash flow of 920 million. The free cash flow being the difference between cash flow from operating activities and cash flow from investing activities. STRABAG had forecasted net capital expenditures in the amount of approximately 350 million for the 2015 financial year. In the end, the net capital expenditures totaled 320 million euros for a level that was again at about that of 2013. The 2014 cash flow from investing activities had been driven, as I mentioned before, by the acquisition of the DIW Group, as well as by the assumption of the financing for an associated company. The CapEx before subtraction of proceeds from asset disposals stood at 425 million. This figure includes expenditures on intangible assets and on property, plant, and equipment of 396 million, the purchase of financial assets in the amount of 23 million, and enterprise acquisitions, which means changes to the scope of consolidation of 6.2 million euros. About 250 million euros is spent annually as maintenance expenditures related to the equipment fleet in order to prevent inventory obsolescence. In addition to these necessary maintenance expenditures, of which the largest proportion was spent in Germany, Austria, and Poland in 2015, STRABAG also invested in project-specific equipment needed for its international, meaning non-European business. Expenditures on intangible assets and on property, plant, and equipment during the year under report must be seen against depreciation and amortization in the amount of 475 million. This figure also includes goodwill impairments in the amount of 25 million euros. We now come to our operational segments. On page number 12, we give a picture on the biggest single segment, which is the North and West segment, comprising all our construction activities in Germany, the biggest single market of the group, in the Benelux states, in Poland, and in Scandinavia. The output volume of that segment at almost 6.4 billion euros remained nearly unchanged in a year-on-year comparison. In the largest single market, Germany, the building construction and civil engineering business, as well as transportation infrastructures, generated an output volume that was almost at the same level as the year before. Whilst this figure declined in Sweden and Benelux, among other places. Poland, the second-largest market in the segment, on the other hand, registered output growth of 23%, thanks to the high level of the order backlog in this country. The revenue of the segment at 5.9 billion euros also settled at about the previous year's level. The EBIT, in contrast, grew strongly from 29 million to 105 million euros. Profits in 2014 had been impacted negatively, as you might recall, by projects in Sweden, the Netherlands, and Germany. In the past financial year, Poland and the transportation infrastructures business in Germany contributed especially positively to the results. You could call the situation now being back to normal for the segment. The order backlog at 5.4 billion euros, meaning a minus of 5%, was clearly below the level of the previous year. Despite the acquisition of several new road construction companies in the German home market, for instance, section 4 of Berlin motorway A100 by Süblin, with a contract value of about 44 million, or the extension of two sections of the A3 in southern Germany for 90 million. Despite that, the previously high order backlog in the country decreased overall. This development can be traced to the situation in building construction, where large single projects such as Allianz Campus near Munich have been completed. The order backlog in Poland, however, grew by a further 2% over the quite attractive level at the end of the previous year. The largest new order was a section of the A1 motorway in the third quarter, with a contract value of more than 118 million euros. This plus could not compensate for the declining volume of orders in Germany, Sweden, and Denmark. If you come to the outlook for 2016 of the segment, we can state that an output volume of 6.4 billion is also expected for that year. The German market for building construction and civil engineering should remain on a high level. Prices for subcontracted services and for construction materials have remained moderate so far, despite the lively building construction activity in the country. In transportation infrastructures, it remains to be seen whether the announced investment plans of the German government will translate into actual projects already in 2016. The Polish construction sector has been undergoing a clear recovery since the year 2014. In 2015, Poland's General Directorate for National Roads and Highways significantly increased its volumes for tenders. For 2016, a number of road constructions are still up for tender. Strabag also expects to see increasing demand in railway construction in Poland. On the other hand, more and more tender participants in Poland are bidding at very low price levels. Therefore, Strabag expects the full-year output volume to reach only a similarly high level as in 2015. In Scandinavia, the countries of Sweden and Denmark are making the most significant contributions to our output volume. Here, both the overall economic environment and the construction market continue to be stable, although the price levels are on the decline due to the higher numbers of competitors. The economic environment for building construction in Sweden continues to exhibit growth potential at currently still stable margins. According to a contract signed on the 31st of March this year, the Netherlands-based Royal Boskalis Westminster NV, Strabag had transferred its equipment, staff, and a series of recently signed maintenance contracts as part of an asset deal. The business field waterway construction, however, will remain in the segment within Strabag. In April 2016, we also completed the full acquisition of Edzublin AG, where our former stake amounted to 57.26%. Edzublin is the number one in the German building construction market. In keeping with our motto, teams work, this acquisition will further simplify not only the group structure, but also cooperation within the group, especially in Germany. Let's come to our second segment, which is South and East on page number 13. This segment comprises all our construction activities in the home market of Austria, in Switzerland, and in all European countries east of those two countries. The output volume of the segment grew by 9% year-on-year and amounted to 5.4 billion euros in 2015. While Slovakia, as already mentioned, stood out with especially high growth and positive figures were registered also in the Czech Republic, in our home market in Austria, we are again number one, but also in Czech Republic, Slovakia, or Slovenia, we do have a top three position. The segment also reported considerable growth in both revenue as EBIT as well as in EBIT. The revenue, for instance, increased by 10% to 4.4 billion and the EBIT by a considerable 17% to 197 million euros. This can be traced back, among other things, to a number of agreements on large construction projects following completion, as well as improvements in several markets of the segment. The order backlog, on the other hand, fell by 16%, amounting to a little less than 3.5 billion euros. Declines, for instance, were registered in nearly all markets with particularly significant drop in Russia, Hungary, and Slovakia. Several large orders acquired during the previous year have to a large degree already been worked off. The currently low volume of new orders requires also a more conservative planning for 2016. For this reason, we expect the output volume in the segment to fall slightly to 4.4 billion euros. Despite the improvements in the operating business, the earnings forecast must take into consideration the tougher economic environment in several markets in which the segment operates. In Austria, which is the largest market of the segment, an increased price pressure has also dominated the field of building construction in the greater Vienna area for the past 2 years already. In 2015, Hungary has benefited from a good order backlog and from the good weather for transportation infrastructures at the start of the year. In Slovakia, the stable development in both building construction and road construction suggests an improvement of the climate in that country, as evidenced also by the tenders for EU co-financed infrastructure projects. In the Czech Republic, on the other hand, current tenders in building construction are focused mainly on projects in the field of education, and although competition is contributing to prices being calculated at the limit of profitability. The Swiss market is expected to remain modest at best. On the one hand, an increased number of infrastructure construction projects is coming onto the market after a very quiet period, especially in the greater Zurich area. On the other hand, the market is strongly contested. The strong price competition that characterizes Southeast Europe is expected to increase. In Croatia and Slovenia, however, the group is hoping to be awarded the tender for EU co-financed infrastructure measures. We already stopped, for instance, all our activities in Moldova already during the first half of 2015 because of the difficult outlooks in the region of Southeastern Europe for infrastructure. In Russia, the investment climate has been strongly impacted by the consequences of the Western economic sanctions, the low oil price, the weak ruble exchange rate, and the high inflation. This is true both for the private and the public sector. A considerable economic downturn with no end in sight could also be registered in the construction sector in 2015. At best, Strabag currently expects larger projects in the Moscow housing market to continue to have a chance on the market in Russia. We now come to the third and last operational segment on page number 14, which is international and special divisions. The output volume of that segment, which comprises our tunneling business, our non-European building or construction business, our FM business and real estate development, as well as raw materials business, our output in that segment grew by 9% and amounted to 3,250 million euros in 2015. This development was due partly to the previous year's acquisition of the DIW Group for facility management and to increases in our non-European markets, among other things. The revenue grew slightly by 2% to 2.8 billion. The EBIT, however, was cut in half to 47 million euros only, although this must be seen against the very strong previous year, 2014. The positive results from project development and facility services were unable to compensate for the negative effects from impairments in the volatile international project business, in particular from a tunneling project in Chile. The order backlog sank by 7% and amounted to 4.3 billion euros. This trend was observed in several markets within the segment, with the highest declines in Italy and the Americas. A 100 million euro contract for the expansion of a copper mine in Chile could not cushion the impact from this development. In Austria, the order backlog was also slightly below the previous year's level. We believe that for 2016, it should be possible to generate a stable output volume of 3.3 billion in the segment, driven in part by the property and facility services business and by tunneling. As edge-out competition continues to define the tunneling business in the core markets of Austria, Germany, Switzerland, and Italy, and the reversal of the trend remains elusive, Strabag is focusing more on Northern Europe and the non-European markets. This necessary market expansion can also be observed for the concession business, where the market situation presents itself as challenging in Western Europe, and the political framework and competition is also difficult in Eastern Europe. We are therefore also in that segment working increasingly on the non-European markets. In the third quarter of 2015, for example, Strabag succeeded in entering the Colombian market in Southern America via the award of a 900 million euro concession project for a joint venture where we hold 37.5%. Internationally, the Strabag Group also is a successful provider in specialty fields such as the tunneling method of pipe jacking and test track construction. In Singapore, for example, we were awarded the contract to extend the sewer network using a pipe jacking method in the third quarter. Among the non-European markets, Strabag is focusing its activities, including its core business, especially on the Middle East, above all, Oman. As in past years, the real estate development business should make a positive contribution to both output volume and earnings. The demand for commercial and residential properties in the core market of Germany remains undiminished and has even grown significantly in a year-on-year comparison. The weak euro has led investors from outside Europe to become increasingly involved in this business field. First steps have already been taken to also develop projects in markets outside of Germany. In September, for example, Strabag entered the Romanian project development market through the acquisition of the Bucharest-based development team of Raiffeisen Evolution. The construction materials business was supported by the incipient stabilization of the construction economy in several Eastern European markets. Let's now come to a short summary of the fiscal year 2015 on page 15. What has been, it is earnings strongly improved, a higher output volume, but less new orders in difficult market, which is to a certain extent due to our motto, put profitability first, output volume up to 14.3 billion, and on the other hand, a reduction of 9% in the order backlog amounting still to 13.1 billion. Significantly improved earnings figures, EBIT plus 21%, earnings per share plus 22%. Very strong cash flow, a plus of 54% for cash flow from operating activities. A proposed plus of 30% on the dividend and an unchanged financially strong situation with a net cash position of almost 1.1 billion euros and an equity ratio again at 31% as in the year before. I would now like to come to page number 17 in order to show you what is to come in the current year. We had announced our mid-term target to reach 3% EBIT margin on sale as from 2016 onwards, and we are very confident to reach that aim in the running year. With regard to the output volume, notwithstanding the lower order backlog, we expect to reach almost the same figure as in the previous year, which was 14.3 billion euros. A strong positive impact on the margin development is not only to be expected by our well-known efforts with Task Force 2013 to improve our cost effectiveness or by our permanent efforts to improve our project-related risk management, but also this year because of our increased efforts in accelerating the digitalization of the construction process within Strabag, for which the headline BIM, Building Information Modeling 5D, has been given by the group. Over the course of the coming years, we therefore plan to invest a double-digit million euro amount in software development and employee training, and we consider that to be a good investment into improved and stable margins. This was basically it for the year 2015 and a brief outlook for 2016. And now we are very open to answer eventual questions. Thank you very much for your attention.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. One moment for the first question, please. The first question comes from line of Norbert Kretlov of Commerzbank. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Three questions, if I may. First, on the Chile tunneling project, which obviously has been a burden in Q4. Likely it's the Alto Maipo tunnel. Could you please comment on potential future burdens for 2016 from this project, or did we digest everything now in Q4? And maybe also with regards to the perspectives of the risk management, are there any particular lessons to be learned from this project? Is there going to be a significant impact on risk management from this? And second, on the BIM, it's the first time that I spot this issue in such a prominent place, and you mentioned it also in the presentation. Could you give us an idea about potential efficiency gains, maybe also in terms of margin points, which could be expectable from BIM? And third, on the sustainability of the margin in Southwest, you mentioned that Southeast, apologies, you mentioned that CE faces increasing price pressure. How should we think about the pretty good margin that we saw in 2015? Is this a peak level? Are there maybe also some one-offs in which might not be extrapolatable, or can we assume that something north of 4% is a valid assumption also going forward?
Thank you very much, Mr. Kretlow, for your three questions. With regard to Chile, you are completely right. It is the Alto Maipo project, which you well know since the year 2013, where we took it into our border backlog. And I'm very thankful for the question, because that gives me the occasion to underpin that we do not expect that project to be a loss-making project by the end of the day, because we are talking about unforeseen difficulties in the geological frame conditions, which is a very typical phenomenon to tunneling projects. In general, you might recall a similar development, for instance, for the Niagara project in Canada in former years, which means that we are currently negotiating variation orders with our customer in that respect, and we believe we will be seeing rather considerable extra amounts to be payable by the customer probably in the course of this year, and we're talking about a high double-digit million euro amount figure. So it is by no means decided yet that Alto Maipo will really be a loss-making project, but as you know, our conservative accounting policy does not allow for taking variation orders into consideration before they had been agreed upon with the customer, and hence we haven't done that. So in my eyes, on the Alto Maipo side, there is a certain upside potential, not the other way around. With regard to BIM, it is true that the digitalization of the construction process is now a little bit fashionable in the industry, at least among the big players, but it is also true that it became a mature subject in the course of the year. We believe that that the investments which we had indicated with the double-digit million amount will well pay off. We have first experience in single projects. For instance, there's a rather prominent building construction project in the harbor of Copenhagen in Denmark, and our experience there is showing that 1 euro being invested into BIM tools for that project pays off with economies of 6 euros per 1 euro. So that is an indicator that might not be generalized for all projects, but it is an indicator that we see a rather high leverage out of the digitalization of construction. All in all, it will be difficult to number exactly what the result effect will be. That's why we limit ourselves in saying it will help us to reach the aim of 3%, and it will help us to keep that stable, rather high level of profitability. With regard to the South and East segment, you're right in assuming that South and East has seen a very good year in 2015. We have also to consider that in this year we have seen the settlement of big claims in the country of Azerbaijan, which I mentioned in former investors calls the year before as a sort of upside potential, and that upside potential has materialized in 2015 in the amount of almost 25 million euros. So this is a sort of one-off, and that leads to the conclusion that we will be seeing good figures also in the future from the segment, but probably less excellent figures than this year. But on the other hand, as I pointed out before, we can expect the two other segments also to come closer to the margin size of South and East, and hence that underpins our confidence in reaching overall the 3%.
That's very helpful. Thanks.
Thanks, Mr. Kretler.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. The next question comes from line of Tobias Loskamp of HSBC. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. First one on the division North and West. Just wondered in Q4, I mean, it's a single quarter, but the margin on output volume level, I think, was around 9%. Is it, let's say, the new normal to have such a high margin at the end of the year, or was there any extraordinary positive impact that you have seen in that segment? Or maybe we do it step by step.
I must say, I do not recall such a margin. It would be very, very strange for a construction situation. Could you probably be more precise in what figures you are based on?
Okay. So sorry, I was looking at the at the first 9 months profit of the North and West, which was still, if I have it correct here, it was still in negative territory. And then you had 105 for the full year. So in, according to my calculations, you had 157 million of EBIT in Q4 on 1.8 billion of output volume, and even less in sales.
Which is a rather normal development in construction. As you might recall, the fourth quarter is decisive everywhere.
Yeah, no, that I know, but I was only wondering that the last years you had also strong Q4s, but with margins in the round, maybe around 5%, now it's nearly double. Would you say that has there been any extraordinary, you know, settlement with any client, or is it simply that the business finally has turned out to be, you know, as it should be?
Well, in the end, this year, 2015, we have seen that several loss-making projects of the past, which you might all well recall, finally came to an end. This was, for instance, the A15 in the Netherlands. We had to report about that several times in the years before. It was also the hydraulic engineering activities, for instance, Jade Weserport in Wilhelmshaven. And it was third of those not very famous chain of project. It was the Teby Center in Stockholm in Sweden. All the three names should be quite familiar to you. And all the projects have come to an end in 2015. And fortunately enough, we had basically swallowed the burden the years before. So it is really the expectation that we won't see such structural losses out of single projects, at least not in that massive accumulation in the future.
No, that's good to hear. Mm-hmm. Finally, that's good. Then I wanted to ask you on the Züblin deal. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an indication of what type of multiple that you have paid for the deal on, let's say, expected longer term net profit contribution or EBIT contribution, or what that has been based on, and also what profit criteria the earnouts will be based on?
This is a little bit difficult, Mr. Loskamp, as we have had as a negotiation partner just a single counterpart, and of course, as is usual in such transactions, we have agreed upon confidentiality with the partner. And hence, we are only allowed to publish the data which we are asked for by law. And that is that we have agreed on a basis of 210.3 million for the contract, and that we have also agreed on a flexible formula for the future running till the fiscal year 2019, but with a ceiling of 114 million euros plus the 110 I mentioned before. So the maximum purchase price could amount to the sum of 210 plus 114. We do, however, not expect that formula to reach the maximum, but we expect that to remain in the lower first half.
Okay. Can you, well, I think historically you said, okay, you have bought back shares at the time when the shares were cheap or considered cheap by the management, and you want to use them as an acquisition criteria. Let's say, how come that this wasn't paid with shares, and why didn't you cancel then all the shares and just the 4%?
Well, in the first place, is it true we have always said that we consider treasury shares as a potential acquisition currency, and it is also true that we made a serious attempt to make use of that in the course of the Zublin transaction. It turned, however, out to be rather difficult to harmonize the interest of a potential recipient of minority of treasury shares with the interests of our core shareholders, which are bound together in a sort of syndicate. In the end, it was too difficult, and we had to accept that that would not work out, and we had to come back to a cash-based transaction. Given that experience, we came to the conclusion that we would at least not seriously have the perspective to make use of all the 11.4 million treasury shares we have, and hence we propose to our supervisory board to cancel 4 million. Why it is 4 million? If you make a simple calculation and you think of cancelling 4 million and again buying another 10%, which would then only be 3.4 billion due to the reduced share capital after the cancellation of the existing treasury shares, that would still mean that the free float would remain above 10% against, meaning that it would not reach the delisting or the squeeze out, to be more precise, the squeeze out area, and that was a signal we wanted to give with the proposal with 4 million.
Okay, no, makes perfect sense. Then I wanted to ask you. Or let's say the cash that you use to pay the deal is just for basically that you take from the cash lines that you have or from the credit lines that you have. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, as you see, the net cash situation was 1.1 billion at the year, and the gross cash situation was 2.7 billion at the end of the year, and hence it was possible, of course, to pay that transaction without any additional financing means.
Mm-hmm. And then I want to ask you, what's your expectation then for the minorities in the P&L for the, let's say, for the future? What kind of level should we expect, and what are the key contributors to these minorities then?
In the past, the vast majority of the minorities was produced by the Zublin minorities. You could, as a rule of thumb, assume it was about 3/4 of the minorities we showed. And that will not be shown in the future anymore because there are no minorities left with Zublin. The remaining biggest single share is the minorities with Strabag of Cologne. There we have a minority stake of 6.7% of the minority shareholders. And that, for the time being, will still be there, apart from a lot of other very small minorities. But the biggest single slice of the majority, we won't see that in the future anymore.
Mm-hmm. And regarding the Strabag AG, is any maybe you can give us an update on the intention of a squeeze out or to reduce it for free float stake? I mean, given that it's, I don't know how much sense it makes for the business to remain listed, but what's your take on that?
We do not believe that it makes sense for that subsidiary to be listed, and you might take that from our attempt to get it delisted thanks to the new legislation in Germany in the course of last year. unfortunately, the law was changed in the meantime, and hence we are still listed at the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, although we do not believe it makes a lot of, or doesn't make sense. With regard to a squeeze-out procedure, the situation is very difficult because Starbucks of Cologne is a different case from Züblin. We do not have just one minority shareholder. We have about 1,500, and that means it is a complicated matter, although I have always declared it is an interesting target for us also to get that situation clarified, because it would again offer the possibility to further optimize the group structure in Germany tax-wise and to further simplify the overall group structure. So that is on the agenda, but I couldn't still give a concrete timeline or a concrete list of measures to be taken.
Okay. And then lastly, on the tax rate, 42.4%. I mean, you said the lack of tax savings for losses in Chile, I think, kind of makes sense. But what about this back taxes due to company audits in Germany? I mean, what does it really mean? And particularly then, what do we need to expect for 16 and beyond? What should we expect as a tax rate?
With regard to that tax audits, this is a rather normal procedure taking place regularly in all the European countries where we are in. The point is that in Germany we have a sort of head office of our non-European construction operation, and the German tax authorities did an audit for several years, as they regularly do, and the outcome was announced in 2015, and we had to consider that with a low single-digit million amount in our year's enclosure 2015. So that is a rather normal factor. The point is that everywhere where we have considerable losses, at least in a single fiscal year, where we don't have many other projects, of course, that contributes to a higher average tax rate. In the past, that was, for instance, due to the fact of the A15 losses in the Netherlands, where we didn't have other considerable construction or operational activities. That is a similar case to Chile in 2015. If we assume that such a case wouldn't take place in 2016 again, we could foresee a more normal tax rate, which would then mean a tax rate considerably below that level.
So more like 32, 34, something like that? Or?
That's the normal level, yes, around 30s, 29 at the minimum. But I think your guess is a fair one, yes.
Okay. And then just one thing that pops to my head now. I mean, you talked about, increasing price pressure in Central Europe and so on, and therefore you are internationalizing your efforts. You won the project in Colombia and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But then if I hear the comments on Chile and on the, let's say, the Canadian projects with Niagara Falls, when it's not uncommon for a construction to hear from a construction company that they are internationalizing the business, doing the first projects, they make losses, and at the end of the day, it's a quite costly exercise. So do you think, is it really the right way to internationalize business because the home markets are dropping away, or shouldn't it be better to reallocate the resources and to stay in the home markets where you know the unions, the ground conditions, and so on to limit the risk of the business?
Definitely a good point, Mr. Loskam. Although we take very big attention not to be aggressive in such new markets for us, and I took the Niagara example in order to show that we are also able to turn a project where we had to report a negative result in the first place to turn it into a profitable project in the end, because that was what has taken place in Niagara, and I hope the same will also be true for Chile in the end. And Colombia is another good example, because we have concluded a very cautious contract, which gives us enough time to prepare the closure on the contract. The contract has been concluded, but it has not yet been closed, which means that we will only be seeing by the middle of the year if really all the frame conditions are being fulfilled to our satisfaction in order to close the deal and then to come to the project execution. It is true, we have to be very vigilant with non-European projects, especially in markets where we have not been before. And that is, on the other hand, the reason why we would not exaggerate with expanding our non-European business. We've always said we just do about 6% of our annual output in non-European markets. It could be a little bit more, let's say a low double-digit figure, 10 to 12% of our annual output, which means on the absolute level, we are talking about a very cautious progress, which we have in mind.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Markus Remis of RCB. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Just a few details left from my side. With regards to the income you generated from the at-equity investments and the other investments, I mean, that was up strongly. If I compare the trend over the last years, it basically shot up from zero to almost 100 million in 2015. It's a bit difficult for us to, at least for me, to model. Can you help us? Is that a new normal we should expect, the level we've seen in the last year, or any help there would be much appreciated. And then lastly, on the earnout clause, will you book that as an interest-bearing liability, or does it carry an interest component as well?
Mm-hmm. It is true that when I come to the at-equity result, last year we have seen certain burdens coming out of our Lafarge joint venture, which is the basic influence on that part of the of our result. And we may not forget that in that at equity we also see the result stake in our joint ventures. As long as we have minority stakes in huge construction joint ventures, they are also included in that part of the result reporting, and hence that is a very normal part of our operational business, although it looks like a financial part of the business, but joint ventures are considered as are to be consolidated at equity once the respective preconditions are being fulfilled. And we have given the details, probably that might help you also. We have given the details under number 6 on page 158 of our annual report.
Yeah, I have that in front of me, and it's quite a decline when I look at the profit from the construction consortia, and on the other hand, the losses are also substantially down. So
it's just
difficult to get a feeling if there was some sort of flop project included or any project that inflated 2014. On the other hand, so it's.
No, I would say it is just the outflux of a huge operational business. The two single projects which you might recall from 2014, which have influenced the respective figures in that part of our results reporting, were the A15 in the Netherlands and the A8 in Germany, two motorway projects which had been shown in 2015 under that reporting schedule.
Right.
That's probably the biggest, or let's say the ones which had influenced the year 2014 the most.
Okay, very clear. And the earnout clause, is that
When it comes to the earnout clause, it is true that we have an interest clause also with regard to the earnout clause. But this only refers to a minority stake because it's a very complicated formula, and we pay out a certain part once it would come to the it would come to the situation we would pay out a certain part of the earnout clause every year, but we would also keep another part of the earnout amount for 1 year in our hands for other purposes, and that latter part will be an interest for the seller of the minority stake.
Okay. One follow-up. I did not really get that answer. In South and East, you said that the margin would be a bit toppish, and it was inflated by a special gain of 20 million or so?
That was the point that we settled last year. We settled some litigation in Azerbaijan, which is with us under the division of Russia and neighboring countries.
Yeah.
And, of course, we had reported the respective losses the years before, and hence it was a sort of positive or upside potential which materialized in 2015 whilst the cost had been borne in the years before.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Remis.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any further questions, please press star followed by one. A question from Patrick Ulrich of Oddo Meriton Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Patrick speaking. Thank you very much for taking my question. I have only one quick question regarding your EBIT guidance, because when I do the calculation, you are forecasting an EBIT of 390 million, but this is only from your operational activities. In the past, you said that you are confident to see some positive one-offs in 2016 from your activities in Netherlands, where you lost a lot of money in the past. Could you please provide us some more color on this?
Well, we do not take that into consideration with our guidance, because it's a sort of digital problem. Either we get a solution or not, and it is our policy not to to take that into consideration for our overall guidance, because there might well be other effects on the other side which might then compensate for such an effect. So that would really be an upside potential, as, for instance, could also be the case with the still open litigation in road construction in Poland, where we have 60 cases under in the courts since the year 2012. So this is outside of the guidance, because we believe that all in all, there will be always be some cases which might even out each other.
And do you expect to reach a final outcome in 2016 for the activities in the Netherlands?
There is a certain probability, yes. I would expect that for the running year, yes.
Okay. And the amount what you have lost in Netherlands is roughly 300 million, it's right?
That is right for the total joint venture, but we in former days we just had a stake of 33%, and in former days our stake increased to 45%. Mm. So our share in an eventual upside potential, thanks to that negotiation, would now be 45%.
Mm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Excuse me, there are no further questions at this time. Please continue with any other points you wish to raise. There are no further questions on the phone line.
Great. Thank you very much for your attention, and have a nice weekend. Till the next time. Bye-bye.